Yes, we are.
All right. Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Monday, September 21st virtual Zoom Boise City Planning Commission meeting. This meeting is being conducted remotely, where all members of the Planning Commission and staff are in separate locations and not at City Hall. Before we start the meeting, I'd like to go over some housekeeping items. Tonight's meeting is being recorded. Those tuning in will notice that all participants, with the exception of the commission and some city staff members, are muted and video has been disabled. With this said, we will allow participants an opportunity to speak during public comment period. If you wish to speak during public comment, there's a toolbar either at the top or bottom of your screen that will appear when you hover over it with your cursor. Click on the word participants and a box will open up on your screen showing a list of participants, and at the bottom of that box you can click on raise hand. This will be seen by a meeting facilitator and you'll be unmuted at the appropriate time to ask your questions or give input. During the time you're unmuted, please make sure you don't have any background noise, such as TVs, radio, etc. Even the shuffling of papers can be picked up and cause disruptive audio feedback through the microphones. All of our standard procedures will be adhered to, such as stating your name and address when called on. Comments will be kept to 5 minutes or less, and vulgarity and inappropriate language will not be tolerated and will result in immediately muted and possibly removed from the meeting. If you are unsure how to virtually raise your hand to participate in discussions, please call 231-582-0336 at any time during the meeting, and Executive Assistant Barb Brooks will be happy to assist you with the process. I would like to thank everyone in advance for your patience and cooperation as we work our way through tonight's meeting agenda. With that being said, I'd like to call tonight's meeting to order. Can we all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America,
to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation, under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Pat, if we could have roll call, please.
Bowman.
Here.
Shoot.
Present.
Shoot.
Here.
McNaughton.
Here.
Moblo. Needhammer. Tom, you're muted. Newton.
Here.
Place. Jeff Ross.
Here.
Monica Ross.
Here.
We did receive a call from Nicole and Aaron requesting to be excused.
Okay. Can we get a motion to excuse their absences?
So moved.
I second.
All right. We have a motion and a second to excuse the absences of Aaron Place and Nicole Moblo. Roll call, please.
Shoot.
Yes.
McNaughton.
Yes.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Newton?
Yes.
Jeff Ross?
Oh, yes.
Monica Ross?
Yes.
Bowman?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, so moving forward to consent agenda. The only thing on the consent agenda is approval of the meetings from last week's meeting. So, any comments before we move on? All right, roll call, please, Pat.
I need a motion.
Oh, a motion. I'm sorry. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from last week? Last meeting, excuse me.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
A second.
All right. We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as presented. Can we have a roll call, please?
Needhammer?
Aye.
Newton?
Yes.
Jeff Ross?
Yes.
Monica Ross?
Yes.
Bowman?
Yes.
Shoot?
Yes.
McNaughton?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Barb, do we have any participants for hearing of citizens not or for non-agenda items? All
Aaron, are you there? Can I take that as a no? Sorry, guys. Is Barb, are you there?
I'll check. Close to this and may not be able to make it. So I don't see any issue with moving on to the second agenda item because a lot of this discussion was kind of centered around that. And earlier talking with Brooke, he indicated he had some preliminary ideas perhaps developing some housing as a part of his development process. Project there in the industrial park and was inquiring about that. So I think a lot of the discussion probably would center around that. So it kind of just lends us into the review and discussion of the housing potential in the industrial district. That's the next agenda item.
Okay. So is it potential for us to move those as unfinished business into our next planned meeting?
If he still wishes to do a preliminary review, yeah, we can come back to that and have this discussion with him.
All right. So is that something he would need to request, or is that something we need to make?
It's a voluntary thing that he can request, and if he still wants to have a preliminary, he can do that. You know, it's there's no obligation to do it one way or the other.
Okay. So that being said, then we can move past sections A and B and on to C for new business.
We go to B.
Oh, go to B.
We're going to have that discussion anyways about what the city can look at in regards to, you know, developing housing. And we have in the past talked about the industrial park and is there opportunities there. So I thought we'd bring this as an agenda item for the discussion to get some feedback from the Planning Commission. Is there some, you know, opportunities there that we should look at? And if so, how would that form take? So I provided you with the origin sections of the regional commercial industrial and the planned industrial district. As you notice in the first item under 1320, principal permitted uses in the regional commercial district, it allows all uses that are allowed in the planned industrial district. So any change you make to the planned industrial district would also be allowed in the regional commercial district. So just so you know, if you're changing something, where those changes would happen. In the planned industrial district, and that's where Brooks property is, and that's the majority of the industrial park. The regional commercial is where the old Carter's building is, and across the street there, more of the frontage roads. The true developed industrial park is the planned industrial district. And in that district, it does talk about limited housing as an accessory use under section 1420I. But it limits that to residential uses containing only quarters for a caretaker or a watchman. So even though it does allow residential uses now. Okay. So looking at that use as allowed, would we want to expand on it in the industrial part? So I guess this is just a beginning of the discussion, and we do have Steve Schnell here, who is the Housing Ready Coordinator for Charlevoix County, and I believe he may be able to, you know, also talk about this, and I can see if I can...
He unmuted me, I think.
Okay, you're good. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Steve. Please. Steve, go ahead.
Terrific. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I really appreciate it. Also, thanks to the Boyne City Planning Commission, city staff, city council. You've done a lot in the past to create more housing opportunities in the city. And everything that we can do to create another housing unit in our area will have significant impact. Our latest target market analysis of the area, of Boyne City specifically, suggests that an annual demand for Boyne City, we could absorb 53 homes at $225,000 or less and 154 rental units at $800 a month or less. So as you can see, the demand is huge, the supply is low, and anything we can do to create more housing opportunities is definitely going to benefit. Specifically to your industrial park, I think you guys know it better than anybody. Your industrial park is, for the most part, pretty low impact, especially relative to industrial parks where zoning was originally created to isolate residential uses from. For the most part, your industrial park could be a very attractive place to create some housing units. It's close to the river. You've got the new bike path going nearby. You've got infrastructure. You've got jobs nearby. And a lot of the housing demand that we're seeing now is shifting, where more younger home buyers and renters, they really want to be near activities, they want to be near their jobs, they want to be near downtown. And your industrial park, especially with the sidewalks and pathways, has a great location for that. In fact, there's really not a whole lot of bad locations in Boyne City for housing, for the most part, but at least opening it up. And I think, obviously, you know, when people think about housing in an industrial park, there would be concerns about noise and smoke and that type of thing. And I think you guys know what your industrial park is like. And anybody buying or creating or building new homes in that area, or rental properties or apartments or whatever they may be, are going to know that they're going to need to build it in such a way that it's attractive and in that area. So the property owners themselves are going to understand, especially with the proposal that you're hearing, that just, my understanding is just an idea at this point, somebody wanting to expand their industrial building and then add some residential units of some sort to that, they're going to know, they're going to have a certain market that they're going to appeal to, but there is a market that they will appeal to. So I think doing vacancy rates, you know, they're so low, meaning there's really nothing available, almost nothing available right now, at a price point that the workforce can afford. So anything we can do to create more opportunities like that is going to be, it's going to have an impact on your on the community as a whole, and especially on your workforce. So happy to take any questions that you might have about that. Those are my thoughts at this point, not having seen any of the proposal at this right now. But generally, as you look at a zoning ordinance amendment, I think it's definitely worth allowing for changing your zoning in such a way to allow for housing in your industrial park. So thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Steve. Are we aware, Barb, are there any other public participants that have any comments they'd like to make on this agenda item? No? Okay. All right, that being said, I'll open the floor to the other planning commissioners for any comment or any questions for Steve.
I've got a question for Scott. What are the parcels in the industrial park? This note is purchased from the city. Do they tend to be lower in cost to those other parcels within the city that could be used for residential development. So is this, and it's, you know, is this a big boon for the developers? And you know, if so, is it a cost issue to reduce property prices elsewhere, and that would be beneficial?
I don't know the exact pricing method for that, but I do believe they're market rate and it's negotiated with the city. So I can get you more information about how those values are determined.
But I mean, market rate for industrial for a, you know, large use may be different from the market rate for residential.
Yeah, and I believe it'd probably be more.
Industrial, okay, would be more? Okay, interesting.
My opinion, yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Larry. Any other questions from the board?
I guess is there a thought to perhaps take the fringes of the industrial park and have kind of more of a buffer zone? I think Steve's comment about having the path back there. I think all of us have ridden the bike path, and you know you've got a lower impact use with that, with a dog daycare or whatever. I forget what that's called. The dog care.
World North.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some other lots back on that section that are definitely closer to the edge that do not see the industrial impact. Would those be more conducive as opposed to sections that are right in the middle between manufacturing facilities such as Magna?
Well, I think you need to look at a fundamental question first before you look at specific properties, and that is whether you make this a primary use or an accessory use. I don't think a primary residential use in the industrial park is a good idea, but I think an accessory use, someone developing residential units as a component of a primary use, that's got some value.
It's like employee housing.
That agreed. I'm not sure who said that. I think that was Skyler.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it sounds like more in terms of we're talking workforce housing and not necessarily like a subdivision or something of that nature.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the intent, even though you probably wouldn't be able to limit that to the workforce. You know, the property owners would have that ability. But to have a certain parcels designated for residential use, I don't think that's necessarily a way to go.
Well, I mean, I guess where I was going is potentially rezoning a portion of it that is on the edge of the industrial park.
Mm-hmm.
I see what you're saying, Larry. Scott, I have a question as well. If you could clarify something for me. So what is the primary difference between an accessory use versus a conditional use in this discussion?
Accessory use is a use that's designated by right and has to be associated with the primary use. So, you know, accessory use for a typical residential piece of property is, you know, a garage. That'd be an accessory building, accessory use, that kind of thing. So it's tied to that primary use. In this, the accessory use right now is that allows some limited housing for a watchman. It allows retail sales associated with that primary use in that district. So there's some accessory uses already allowed in this planned industrial.
Right. So an amendment to the ordinance, if as an accessory, would mean that that housing would have to be supplemental of the business that's established.
It would have primary use on the, you know, a primary use that's allowed by ordinance.
Right.
Already located on that property, or as a part of that accessory, you know, development.
Right, right. Because it, I mean, it's pretty specific about, you know, residential for quarters for a caretaker or a watchman. Right. So I want to be clear that, you know, if there were to be an amendment to the ordinance, would any additional housing have to be for, you know, something that was directly related to the primary use, you know? So say, for instance, in Brooks's example, you know, he has this maintenance company, so all the people that were in the housing, would they have to work for his maintenance company? I guess, would that be a requirement of an accessory use, or is
it? I don't think you have that ability to discriminate who could use those housing units, but property owner probably would have, you know, preferences to who they rent to.
Sure.
You know, they're building housing and they need employees, they're probably going to rent to those.
Right.
Room, they may rent it to somebody else.
Sure, absolutely. No, yeah, well, you want to keep it full. So I just wanted to try and understand a little bit the difference. So because conditional would require them to actually come before the commission and basically get conditional approval for that additional housing, correct?
I was reading something else. I'm sorry. No, what was the question?
Oh, no. I want to clarify. So if it got added to the ordinance or amended in the ordinance to be a conditional use, that would require the developer to actually come before the planning commission with
They have to go through the
request conditional approval to add the additional housing, correct?
Right.
Okay. And I apologize, I missed last meeting, but I know we said we're trying to get away from conditional uses and conditional zoning, but I just wanted to clarify that. I appreciate it.
Well, I think
Barb, can you hear me now?
Yes. Thank you, Barb.
Okay. When you're ready, there's a couple hands up.
Oh, I apologize. Would it be appropriate, Scott, to go back for the public comment?
Well, it's Steve, I believe, maybe have some comments, and I see Monica has some.
I got some comments too. When your time there, Chair, Mr. Chair.
All right. Is Steve the only public participant that has a comment?
Yes.
Is everybody else? Okay. I'm going to let Tom go ahead real quick in case he's got a question for Steve.
I just want to give a little historical perspective to this. Before the virus, we were being part of the Housing Solutions Committee. We were discussing this as a topic because we have over 1,000 jobs in the industrial park, probably 600 to 800 of them being at Lexmar. And most of the companies out there said that they were underemployed. They could not find enough employees. And the reason they can't find employees is the same old thing, housing or daycare or wage paying jobs or transportation. We had many discussions as to, would Lexmar be interested in, you know, with 800 employees and build some type of employee housing? We talked to more than one company. Would there be any interest in building a daycare? And, you know, all those discussions were before the virus, and I'm sure we're not at 1,000 jobs out there currently, but potentially we are because, you know, we added the surgery center, and so we haven't really stopped. With that being said, the schools kind of stepped up there. The 3- and 4-year-olds have opportunities to get some schooling, which took care of daycare. So we're back to housing. And if all the employers out there are underemployed, one of the reasons being housing, I think it's logical that we would try to find some solution to that, which would be an amendment. And I thought your question was good, Jeff. Is it you know, how do you differentiate? I would think if someone built housing, they would be the ones that would want to fill them with their employees. But if, say, they didn't fill them with their employees, could they fill them with other employees from the industrial park, or would it just be open to anybody that wants to rent out there? I we have some things to work through, but those are simple solutions. The big issue is I think we're on the right track to encourage housing because we have 1,000 jobs out there. There's not 1,000.
Sure.
There's a shortage of housing, as Steve said.
I know Steve still does have another engagement, and he has to leave in a few minutes. I know if he gets has to leave.
Okay, Monica, was your question for Steve, or can you hold your comment for just a moment?
I can hold my comment until Steve's done.
All right, Steve, if you'd like to add to the discussion, that'd be great, please.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. I just have another housing meeting tonight at 6 o'clock at Charlevoix. So, real quick, I wanted to support Scott's comment about if you're allowing housing in an industrial district, that by accessory use, that's way more appropriate. I wasn't necessarily providing my comments on primary housing and industrial, but I would also encourage, if there's a thought of rezoning certain areas to residential, then, you know, along that river front or the trail, maybe that's something to look at, but you guys would know that better than I. So that's the main thing. Also, as you're talking about workforce housing and requiring that or not requiring that, I understand, if I remember right, the city owns some property within the industrial park, and if you were to consider a sale of that property, perhaps a condition could be a permanent deed restriction that any housing provided on there be provided voluntarily by the property owner in exchange for that property transfer. That'd be one way to do it. I don't think zoning is the best way to handle requiring year-round workforce housing, but a deed restriction on some sort of property transfer deal might be one opportunity. So that's all I wanted to add, and I really appreciate it. Thanks for having this conversation tonight.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate your time. All right, Monica, you had a comment?
Yeah, I have some issues with allowing housing within the industrial district. I'm thinking back of the pellet plant and what that went in, and all the residential uproar over smoke. We've created an industrial district to house industry. Putting housing that close to it, I see as a potential issue and that could happen in the future. The other comment I have is tying the housing to an employer. These are volatile times. What if the employer pulls out of the industrial park? Then who governs how that housing gets used? I see that as a potential problem. I don't have any problem with, let's say, along M75, there are some lots that are actually part of the industrial park. Possibly those should be rezoned or have some sort of caveat that they could be high-density housing. Because I think high-density housing is what fits best along a highway. An individual house does not. An apartment building could. If it were properly done with, you know, berms or fencing or some sort of pleasing aesthetic look to it. And again, along the river, if we do want to do some housing along there, I see what Mr. Schnell, was it, had mentioned, that would be appealing because people want to live near work. Maybe those areas should be not part of the industrial park. Maybe they should be rezoned for a residential use. I don't like to see us just piecemeal dividing up our industrial park because somebody has an idea to put housing in there. I did drive by Brooks' parcels. I think that that would be a very bad spot to do housing. It's who wants to live by businesses? I think the way we have it right now, that if you have a residential use that's tied to the business itself, for instance, the Dog World North, if they needed a caretaker to be on site 24 hours a day, they should be allowed to have residential use for that purpose. But I think just willy-nilly saying that, gee, we need more housing, let's put it in the industrial park, is not a good course of action.
I just want to emphatically echo, Monica, what you said. I don't think you could be any more spot on. You know, I think the point of a planning commission is not to look at what its current use is, but what its future use will be. That is what we do as a planning commission. And as we've seen Boyne developing, you know, both in, you know, in size, with the influx of people that are coming here, likewise, we need to anticipate that that industrial park is going to grow. Certainly in the past, you know, it could see that there's potential to grow there, but I think that that use can be used in the future with industry. You know, that's an in-tandem thing that we're looking at, certainly, that we do need housing, you know, we need workforce housing, but we also need the ability to, you know, build capacity within our city as well. If we build up in our residential corridors, like as you had mentioned, in high-density housing, I think we will see a commensurate growth in our industrial areas. There's certainly not only, you know, the noise issue, but the safety issue, and to piecemeal the layouts that we do completely deconstructs the reason we have a planning commission, why we have these planning guidelines.
Thank you, Rose.
I have a question for Monica and Rose. With that being said, what I'm envisioning is your second floor of a building would have four apartments or something like that, or six apartments or two apartments. That's what I'm envisioning. Do you envision that being appropriate?
I truly feel it should only be if it is something like a caretaker or something like that. I think creating housing for what I'll say the general public in an industrial park is not an appropriate use. Now, if we want to do, like I mentioned, along M75, to say an apartment building along those lots that are part of the industrial park, I don't have a problem with that. But when we're going into the interior of the industrial park, I don't think residential housing of any type is appropriate there. I think we should work harder with, let's say, the developer that is looking at the property on that used to be the Maxi property. That to me is a good spot. Work with them for higher density so that financially it makes sense. Another property that the city owns that could have some potential is the Moyer property that is adjacent to the recycling as well as some apartment buildings. And there's water and sewer available at the road. Some of that property is not conducive to housing, but some of it is. And to look down on that pond and things like that, I think denser housing in that area would be a much better spot to pursue rather than trying to put it in our industrial spot and then tying our hands to further industrial development in that area.
One moment, please. Jim, were you raising your hand a moment ago?
Yeah, I'd like to at least hear what Brooke Walsh has in mind. I'm disappointed that he's not here. You know, I drove out there today too, I'd like to at least see what he is proposing and how he would answer some of these questions. You know, like what would you do if the business was sold, and you know, would it be second floor? Would it be? Would it? What would it look like?
Yeah, I'm open to at least hearing from him. I'd also like to see, you know, we have an EDC that's basically concerned with the industrial park, and the people on that commission are, you know, they're mostly people that are business owners in the industrial park, and I'd like to see what their thoughts are about housing in the industrial park. I agree with Steve Schnell. We need it. I had some friends in from out of town a couple weeks ago, and they stayed in an Airbnb, and the person that handled it for them takes care of 17 different properties in Boyne City that are Airbnb. So, you know, we're losing housing for potential workers. I'd at least be open to see what the other possible solutions are. I agree. You don't want it looking willy-nilly that, you know, they're just scattered around in the industrial park. I think it does need to, there does need to be care taken to where this would be and how it would look. But I'd like to hear from some of the businesses in the industrial park what their thoughts would be about this.
Thank you, Jim. Was that Tom that had another question, or?
No, go ahead.
Or was that? I thought I heard somebody else trying to make a comment. I apologize.
I have a question, but let someone else go first.
I just want to make sure, Barb, does anybody else have their hand raised?
There are no other hands raised at this time.
Okay. All right, Tom, please go ahead.
Question for Scott. Wasn't this presented to the EDFLA or whatever the initials are, which is the committee that oversees the industrial park? Wasn't this, no, this topic is, discussed?
No, this is the first discussion we had about this. And maybe addressing some of Jim's comments there, Brooke really didn't have a real good plan thought out. It's more of a concept that he just brought up, and probably you would just kind of like get some feedback from the Planning Commission whether it's worthwhile or not. And if it does happen, it would probably be down the road a bit for him. So I thought it, you know, it's probably best just to kind of have this discussion, and then he would have some feedback to see, you know, is it viable down the road? Is the Planning Commission receptive or not? So then he can make some choices on exactly how he further develops.
Thank you, Scott. All right. Any of the other board members have any other comments, questions?
Yeah, Larry Shute here. I have to agree with Monica and Rose. I am not in favor of allowing residential in there unless it is on the fringes and it is rezoned. I think it's a matter of us really, you know, anticipating what's supposed to be in these various locations. And, you know, the pellet plant has been a terrible noise. Lexmar is not necessarily quiet either. So, you know, I think it is, I have to agree completely with keep industrial.
All right.
I want to add as well, Tom, you had asked both Monica and myself, you know, our reservations for, you know, like you said, would we be opposed to having residential quarters on a second floor? Knowing very well now a non-conforming residential unit within commercial corridor and within touching another space, what that seems to require, according to building codes, is whether you're going to go with residential or commercial code, and a firewall has to be built if you're going to follow commercial code for protecting a residential unit. What that further does is create a cost issue that's highly prohibitory to creating a workforce housing, having done that myself.
I totally support Rose's opinion on that. It's just not the right place. Interior of an industrial park is not the right place for residential housing. That's why we have a master plan. That's why we have areas that are assigned for it. And we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we constantly piecemeal allow these things.
Exactly. That's why we plan as a commission, so it makes sense not for today, but just is for the future as well.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, guys. Any other comments?
Larry has his hand up.
Oh, Larry, go ahead.
No, I had already made my comment, but, you know, I have to agree there's a distinct housing shortage. There are multiple other ways of addressing the housing shortage that we will need to get into.
Just my final
comment. I don't disagree, but I thought Jim or agree. I'm just throwing it out there for discussion. But I think Jim had a good idea to let's hear from the committee that oversees the industrial part. They might have an interesting perspective. Just more information for us to digest.
All right. I mean, Scott, would that be worthwhile trying to revisit this, speaking with the committee that oversees that? Maybe even Mr. Brooks an opportunity to come back and see us?
Well, I'm sure Mr. Brooks is going to come see you one way or the other, because he needs to add on to his facility there. So I think this discussion is probably going to be helpful, given that there seems to be, strong concerns in regards to developing any kind of ordinance amendment to allow housing, that he probably would just, move forward with the commercial aspects of it and bring a plan to the commission in that. Because I don't see, developing an ordinance, changing this, given this discussion, anytime soon. We may want to reflect a little more on some of the other ideas about changing some districts or things like that, if there are other opportunities there. The EDC, LDFA, we can, pose this question to them. What do they feel about it? Maybe get some impact, feedback from them as well. I could talk to city manager about that, getting that question on there and see if we can get some feedback on it.
All right. I think that'd be appreciated. Otherwise, unless anyone else has any comments, we'll move on to the next agenda item. All right. So we'll move on from B. And Scott, the five-year review of our master plan, please.
Yes. The Michigan Planning Enabling Act requires that once a master plan becomes 5 years old, it needs to be at least reviewed annually. The master plan just turned five, turned five in October, so I thought it was an opportunity to look at our goals and objectives and, the plan implementation aspects of the plan and get some discussion and should we move forward with updating the plan or, is it good for now and look at a more comprehensive update when the census data comes out. That way you can update all your social, economic, and other information as part of the plan update. So that's usually the way I like to approach it. If there are some minor amendments, we can look at those. But just to tweak it here and there, because it is a pretty intense process to update or amend a plan, you have to go through at least 6 months of notice and review and hearings and all these other kinds of things. And if it's just minor adjusting of a thing here or there, it's really not worth the effort. So I thought I'd start that discussion and we can do it however you'd like, go through the goals individually, maybe bring it up for discussion if there's particular points that you want to talk about or however.
All right. Well, I guess if we want to go through goals and objectives, I guess what I may do for the group is just kind of how many goals do we have all together?
Well, we have four different goals, and under those goals, there's objectives and then specific items that try to move forward those objectives. So, like under goal one, inspiring local business and economic development, there's, you know, probably a dozen or so different objectives, and some of those have some specific aspects to how to help move forward that objective.
Okay. That being said, I mean, I read through this thoroughly myself. I don't know if the other members of the board want to go through piece by piece. I'm almost rather just open it up for conversation, discussion amongst the board. Are there anybody in the public participants, Barb, that have any questions or comments before we get started?
There aren't any hands up at this time.
All right. Thank you. So I would like to propose, if everybody had an opportunity to go through this and read it for themselves, do any of the other board members have any comment on the existing objectives and goals that we have set?
I thought they looked quite appropriate still. And I think Scott's comment to wait until after the census is in seems to make a lot of sense.
When would you expect the census information to be in?
It's usually about a year to two years after the census is completed. So between 21 and 22, that data would be distributed.
Okay, and where do you see this changing the master plan?
Social demographics, all that stuff, all the supporting documentation in the plan, that would all be updated as part of that census data.
Okay.
So, Scott, I have a question for you. So, the master plan, because I agree with Monica's comment that I think the goals and objectives still look really solid. Everything I read in there I really liked. But the question I have, because it reflects a large part, not only in what we just discussed, but just more critical things, is rezoning of certain areas within the city limits something that affects the master plan? I mean, would our hands be tied for 2 years if we waited for the census data to make modifications to the existing zoning in some areas?
No.
Okay.
A plan is a guide.
Okay.
Not the law. You try to move down that vision of that plan, but if there are legitimate reasons to deviate, changes in circumstances, that's perfectly fine. You just have to have a rationale why you do that. So, no, just because something is inconsistent with the plan, if there's rationale to do it, you can go ahead and do that.
Okay. If there's rationale, but if you do it against the master plan, there is cause for some question. I mean, the master plan is supposed to be this look into the future. You know, sometimes when I look at our master plan, I think it looks exactly like our zoning plan right now, and don't necessarily think it's as futuristic and look into what you really want, what's your dream for this city. I think you could use some work as far as, you know, kind of future thinking, what makes sense for the city. What, I mean, if you had to, you know, come back 30 years from now, what would you like to see, you know? So,
well, yeah,
you have
a comprehensive update, what I would say. That's just not a tweaking. So that would be something that you'd want to probably have all the information available and have a lot of community input and develop that plan.
Yeah. I mean, I've never understood why there's a separate professional office and medical district when they all seem very, very similar.
Well, I think the thought at the time was more like a medical campus kind of versus just typical office use.
That's right.
So.
Does anyone else have any comments on the existing goals and objectives?
Jeff, I agree with you. I think all the goals and objectives are they're well thought out, and I think they still make sense. The part that interested me the most was at the end, the priority redevelopment sites, and I thought it was kind of cool that there were six of them, and we basically accomplished or in progress three of them. So I thought that was good. The theater and the site on Boyd Avenue that used to be Ray Acres, and then of course the site on Lake Street, with the old city garage that's been sitting there for 20 or 30 or 100 years, there's a proposal to go in there. So maybe, it would be worthwhile to come up with three more to fill those spots. Where this is a five-year review, that's what we're being asked to do, is just do a five-year review. And I don't have any ideas off the top of my head, but I think it might be worth something worth thinking about.
Yeah, I agree, Jim.
As part of being a redevelopment ready community, we have to have at least three designated redevelopment sites and have those listed with the state and put on their website. The thing about putting those in the master plan, and we did this on purpose, putting more than that three, because they turn over, and then you don't want to be in a place where you only have three constantly changing this list. So if we do change it in the future, I would recommend almost, maybe more, maybe 10 or 12. And then you have a big list that, as there's turnover, there's still, other priority sites that you want to look at. So.
Well, and Monica mentioned one a few minutes ago, so.
And Jim, it beat me to the punch on that one. So reevaluating this and determining additional sites for this redevelopment, would that be part of the major master plan review that would require the longer, thorough, 6-month period to get that actually put back into the master plan? Is what you're saying, Scott? That's not something you can kind of do on the fly.
I was thinking to have like a separate document. One, you have the redevelopment ready community designation identified in the master plan and how it's important to look at priority sites, but maybe have a separate like sub plan that you adopt, like a redevelopment priority list that can be reviewed annually and updated annually without going through the entire opening up the amendment process to the master plan, which takes much, much longer. So maybe just have general discussion about redevelopment and priorities in that sense, and then have a specific list that we can perhaps, as part of the annual planning report or some other planning document, that we can update and keep a little more current.
Right. So instead of having this list be part of the master plan, have it be like a reference document or a sub portion that can be amended more easily, more frequently.
Yes.
But that would require the more thorough review to implement that, correct?
The update, I would take away those listing sites in the master plan, but it doesn't prevent you from developing a different priority list and just adopting that document as its own standalone document, and then reference that document in your master plan.
In the master plan, sure. Makes perfect sense. Okay. I think someone else had a comment.
I was just going to mention that some other sites that we might want to add to that list is, how about some of the properties along Division Street that are near where we have those business condo development back in where Randy Cruzell and Moki and those guys. Yeah, I don't remember the name of that street, but just to the right of that street, there's quite a bit of open space. That, to me, would seem like it could lend itself to some sort of commercial development. And the other thing is, at one time we had a proposal to develop the end of Franklin Street into residential housing. And that might be a development-ready area that could be included in the list.
Yeah. Well, the one thing about the RRC sites, those designations were basically the redevelopment of the downtown core, and that's kind of identified it, so that's why those were focused on. The MEDC and the RRC are looking at maybe having a little more holistic approach, and is there opportunities for housing as part of a redevelopment community, or, you know, looking outside the boundaries of the core downtown. So they are beginning to look a little differently how you identify these sites. But I think that you have a great point there. There are other priorities that really don't fit the RRC, but we should still have some kind of priority list on that. So maybe we, you know, part of our own planning document, you know, these are our redevelopment priorities. You know, these are the specific RRC sites, but these are other important areas as well.
Okay.
Does it have to be a site or a use?
They're looking at specific buildings is what they're looking at.
Okay.
The redevelopment of, you know, existing facilities.
Yeah, is the old red building on Ray Street that the library owns, is that something that would be appropriate for redevelopment?
Potentially, yes.
Because they didn't end up doing an expansion, they bought a bookmobile instead?
Yeah. That could be a site, you know, but, and another, you know, part of this is, you know, the property owner's willingness to participate in that, so you kind of have to have that relationship there. So if the library is willing to say, yeah, we're looking for opportunities here, so that gives it a little more merit at the city level to put it on that priority list.
Well, and Scott, that brings to, I have an additional question, if you don't mind. I noticed, like, Site 2, for instance, it says it's not listed. So, and the city, obviously, I don't think owns it. So in order for us to list the site as, you know, redevelopment ready, like you just stated, you'd have to have some layer of cooperation with the existing property owner and whether
it's not required, but it's very beneficial. If you're shopping for developers, that's the first thing they want to know is, you know, do we have a willing property owner that's going to negotiate a deal or whatnot, or are they, you know, not interested? So if they're not interested, it's really not conducive to have it as identified as a site.
I would think that same thing would apply to Site 4 because she's just gone in and spent a lot of money making that into her personal residence, a vacation rental apartment, as well as her professional office.
Yeah, I would eliminate that from the list. At the time that it was developed, the property was available. So.
Right, when it was a real estate office, that was one thing, but now it's probably not worthy of being on that list.
No.
Well, basically, a couple of the items in there, it's already become personal residence or bed and breakfast.
A good portion of that list has already been taken care of. We know REH Acres has been redeveloped. Potentially Site 6, if they're able to move forward with the lake project, that'll go away. We know Site 4 is pretty much off the books. It's my understanding the city now owns the theater. Is this correct, Scott?
The Main Street purchased the theater, and yeah.
All right. So the question is then: can the city still work with an outside developer to actually rejuvenate it? Should it stay on the list, or should that be replaced with another potential property as well?
Well, that's an excellent question because, you know, sometimes there may be some benefits to having a site listed in the RRC. And, you know, that may help opportunities to the state to help maybe open some resources to develop it. So,
sure. Okay.
A good idea.
Okay.
How about part of Honeywell, they have some buildings, obviously, that they're not using for their personal use. I'm thinking specifically of the area that the city used while the new city hall was built.
From my understanding, they're not interested in getting rid of any of their property, so you really don't have a willing property owner there.
And whatever happened with the community center that was going in the, what was it, the Elks Lodge
building.
Or whatever?
Yeah. The old Mason building?
Right.
Masonic Lodge. Yeah, that's it.
Again, I think you have a property owner that has a vision for that property, and it, redevelopment of it is not one of those visions.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
There's always the little house next to Mather's Ford.
Yeah.
Lua Wadi's little house.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's lots of sites, and I think this could be a great discussion. I think it's more of a concept now how we want to approach it. You know, do you want to keep it in the master plan, or do you want to have another document that lists these priority sites that you can review?
No, I think I concur with your thoughts, Scott, is to make it a reference to a more living document that can be, you know, annually amended and reviewed without having to go through the whole amendment process of the master plan. So I concur with you that that would be a great approach.
I did that approach also.
I did see something else in here, and it's just words, and I don't know if it really matters, Scott, but I do know that we've amended our ordinance to reference the mobile home park to being manufactured housing now.
Yes.
Is that an amendment that can be made easily in the master plan, or is that something that needs to be done during the more thorough review?
Well, given that it refers to a district that no longer exists, I think it's my correction now. So you're just correcting what the name is now. So I don't see it as a major amendment at all.
All right. So is that something during this little review we should try and push forward on then?
I almost consider that like a grammatical correction as opposed to
an
amendment. We can do that in-house.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Otherwise, I mean, I tend to concur with Monica, you know, and others about waiting until we get that thorough census data before we take a bigger stab at the larger whole. As long as I know our hands aren't tied in terms of being able to do some rezoning in areas that the needs may arise. I think that was pretty abundant in our previous conversation that, you know, there's areas that if we could rezone those areas, we could probably get some great development to address some of these objectives that are in the master plan. Anybody else have thoughts on that? Anyone?
Well,
all right. That being said, guys, does anybody else have any questions or comments concerning this 5-year review? I'm not sure we need to make a motion on anything, do we, Scott?
No, we just need to
concur that
document our discussion in the minutes and the consensus that no amendment at this time is required.
Okay. Does that require a motion or just a verbal consensus?
Just a consensus. It doesn't require a motion, no.
All right. I concur at this time we don't need any major amendments and we should review it once we get the census data. Any others?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, perfect. We will close out item C and move on to staff reports. Scott, please.
A few items. The City Commission adopted the International Property Maintenance Code, so that will become effective September 29th. Lakeview Village has received their state approval for their addition plans, and I have been working with them on those items that the Planning Commission identified in regarding to the additional sidewalks and landscaping, additional landscaping required, and so I will be getting those. The IMI, This is in Wilson Township, but it's just a day adjacent to the city. They're going to be doing a pretty major expansion, about 37,000 square feet on their facility. They just reacquired a parcel in the industrial park that's adjacent to them. It's lot 5. So they will be putting a new access drive out to Lexmar Drive, and they may be contemplating some additional expansion on that site in the future. So that's good news. And then on October 22nd, there's the housing summit. It's going to be a virtual summit this year. I know in the past, a number of planning commissioner members attended that. So if you'd like to do it this year, please contact Jane at the front desk, and she can get you on that list. If you do want to do it, contact her before Friday, because the early bird rate is good through then. On Monday, the rate will go up. So unless there's any questions for me.
Do you have any, do you know the times? Is it smack dab in the middle of the day again, Scott?
That, I haven't seen
on the housing summit.
But typically that's what they've done. It's an all-day event, starting on 9, and ends about 4. So, and there's a number of different presenters.
Is there any way you guys could check to see if there's access to, like, since it's a virtual meeting, maybe we could review it after the fact? Is there any way we can look into that?
Yeah, I can check with that, see what how that's going to operate, and get some more detail on that.
Perfect. That'd be great, Scott.
Jeff, the agenda is out, so I think City Hall could get that agenda to you.
Okay. I just don't know how I'd do anything in the middle of the day.
Right.
All right, Scott, was that it for staff reports?
That's all I had.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Scott from the board? All right, moving on to go to the order. Larry, I'm pretty sure you had some questions.
Yeah, what is the status of the Maxi property development? Has that been taken to the City Commission?
It went to a first reading, and it's scheduled for a second reading on the 13th.
Is there any result out of the FOIA?
I have not been contacted in regards to that.
Okay. And lastly, I'd like to echo Jim's comment. You know, for a number of months, I've been talking about the potential of a short-term rental ordinance similar to what other cities have. And to kind of piggyback with our bed and breakfast section in the ordinance. And I have to agree, as we're talking about housing, the need for housing, to see more and more residences taken off the housing rolls for short-term rentals, just because we don't have a hotel, is counterproductive to what is being pleaded for by many people. So if the city could find a way to perhaps make that a priority to start looking into that, I think it'd be very helpful for our current situation.
Are you talking about trying to do an ordinance to limit an owner's ability to rent their vacation home out?
It could come to that if there is too high of a density within the city.
Uh-huh.
I think there's certain locations where the short-term rentals are appropriate. In areas on main arteries and on close to downtown, I think they're very appropriate. They have two or three of them on one block in the middle of a residential area. I don't think is appropriate. We've already got zoning ordinance that says you cannot turn a house into a bed and breakfast as a commercial use. I believe that a short-term rental is a commercial use. And that's not allowed in a residential area.
I have a question for Scott. Is there, if someone claims their a personal residence exemption, is there a limit to how many weeks they can rent it out as a vacation rental?
Well, before they have to start, I got to back up. There isn't a limit, but when you go over a certain amount of days, then you have to start reporting income and to the assessor, and so that assessment may change, and your designation as a homestead may be challenged.
Well, the reason I ask is a home in my neighborhood on the water changed hands recently, and I noticed that I wanted to know who owned it, so I looked it up. And I noticed that that person claims it as their primary residence, yet I've never seen them there. It's a vacation rental every single week. So I was just curious.
All right.
Like that's just turning into a larger conversation that we've had in the good of the order.
Yeah. we've kind of gone beyond the... So any other comments on just good of the order? Scott, I'd like to ask, has there been any feedback to the city on the lake project? Is that development's going to start anytime soon?
We got a response from Marilyn Crowley a couple of weeks ago indicating they still intend to move forward, but it was not specific on timelines or when.
But they haven't abandoned the project or anything like that?
No, they have not.
That we're aware of. Okay, excellent. Excellent. All right.
Speaking
perfect.
Of a housing project, I understand the 820 Main Street was purchased to be, you know, kind of like an affordable housing unit. I've not seen anything done. I've seen some survey stakes go in, and I go past it biking when I go to the bike trail. What is the status of that one? I understand Jane McKenzie's group was heading that up, but it's been over a year without any
help. Is that the Santa house there, or is that?
Yes.
Yeah, just like a single little house on the double lot.
Yeah. Last I knew, she was getting a survey and looking at options for how many lots and how many units could be potentially built on there, but I haven't seen any formal plans about moving forward.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? All right, so we'll close out good of the order. Can we get a motion for adjournment?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Seconds.
All right, Pat, may we have a roll call, please?
Newton.
Yep.
Jeff Ross.
Yes.
Monica Ross.
Yes.
Bowman.
Yes.
Shoot.
Yes.
McNaughton.
Yes.
Needhammer.
Yes.
All right, motion carries. We will see you all. Our next scheduled meeting is October 19th at 5 p.m. Have a wonderful evening.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Welcome to our new members. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Monica.
Okay.
You're welcome. Great to be here.
Jim and Monica, before you guys get off, the next couple of days, if you could come into City Hall so we can get you sworn in, please.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Pat, I'm supposed to sign the minutes as well, right? Do I need to stop by for that, or?
No, at this point, when we get back face-to-face, because Aaron's got a stack
we'll
of them, so
of
we'll take care of it all at that time.
Okay. All right, perfect.
All right, thank
Anything
you.
Anything else for me, then?
Nope, you're good.
All right, have a wonderful evening, everybody.
You guys, too.
Thanks.
you.
So with this whole change, does that potentially mean that we could have our next meeting person to person?
What was the whole change?
Last Friday, Whitmer raised our area to
250.
To 250 indoors.
Could do it.
Thanks, Barb.
Yeah, hey, I love the mask.
Thank you.
I got a vanilla one at home. I think I might use it.
There you go.